So we recently had a student that was, she helped support several of our programs actually, but at one in particular that we had our kind of graduation ceremony at Virginia Tech, she was there and became very emotional, just hugging our students and thinking about the fact that she's graduating and wouldn't be able to continue volunteering in the same way with us as she had been.
And greetings, everyone, and welcome to Buzz for Good, where we talk all things nonprofit, the people they serve, and the good they do. And as you can tell from the pomp and circumstance playing in the background, it is graduation season for college students throughout the country. And at this very moment, I am preparing to drive to Fredericksburg, Virginia, to witness my daughter, Emily, graduate from the University of Mary Washington. And I find myself in awe, as I am with all of my daughters, just in awe of their idealism and passion and desire to be difference makers and game changers in our world. But I also know that she will soon be confronted by the realities of, quote, the real world, and really just to make money in order to live. And that will involve trade-offs and sacrifices with that idealism she currently possesses. And I know that she is not alone. While in college, many young people not only enjoy academic and social successes, they also find meaning through service opportunities, entrepreneurial experiences, and an atmosphere, ivory and idealistic to be sure, that inspires them to change the world. So as they prepare to enter the real world, I find myself asking, what are they leaving behind in the halls and dorms and quads of their college campuses? As they walk the stage to receive their diplomas, will they also take with them the passion and inspiration to serve and create and be a change for good in our world? And so on today's Buzz for Good, I will be talking with both nonprofit leader Jenny Ayers, who has worked with college students who served at her Literacy Volunteers of the New River Valley, and entrepreneurial guru Mike Abbott, to learn the advice that they would give college graduates on keeping the flames of idealism alive. But before we get to these conversations, I am Michael Hempill, creator and host of this radio show, as well as the TV show Buzz, that airs every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. on Blue Ridge PBS, as well as on our YouTube channel at Buzz for Good, where we feature the great work that nonprofits do, and we provide them with pro bono marketing resources through members of the American Advertising Federation of Roanoke, resources that allow them to attract more donors, volunteers, and clients to their cause. In short, resources that help them achieve more buzz. You can find out more about us at our website, buzzforgood.com. That's buzz, B-U-Z-Z, number four, good.com, as well as our social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube, all at Buzz for Good. We have produced 31 TV shows to date, featuring 50 or so nonprofit organizations from throughout Virginia. And our most recent episode dropped just this week, starring Literacy Volunteers of the New River Valley. And we want to once again thank our good friends at WordSprint in Blacksburg for coming onto the show and donating their marketing talent and expertise helping Literacy Volunteers. We also thank 100 Plus Women Who Care of the New River Valley for providing the sponsorship support needed to fund our production costs. And if you believe in the work that we are doing and would like to support it, please go to our website, buzzforgood.com, and under sponsorship and support, you too can contribute and be a Buzz for Good for Buzz. I want to thank our sponsors as well as Roanoke Cultural Endowment, which is working to provide a long-term funding solution for arts and cultural organizations in Roanoke, roanokeculturalendowment.org, as well as Freedom First, where people bank for good, freedomfirst.com, and Partners in Financial Planning, a Southwest Virginia-based financial management firm, partnersinfinancialplanning.com. And now, in honor of all you who are preparing to graduate college, as well as the parents and family members who helped you get through college, I hope that you will listen to my conversation with entrepreneur Mike Abbott and nonprofit leader Jenny Ayers about how to continue being a force for good as you start the next chapter of your lives. Well, hey, Jenny.
Hi, Michael.
It's good to talk to you again. It's been a busy week, or a buzzy
week.
A buzzy week, as I like to say. Yeah, so earlier this week, we aired our newest Buzz TV show featuring literacy volunteers of the New River Valley. We had a lovely watch party in Blacksburg on Wednesday night. You had great attendance there. And yeah, it was an amazing journey, and I appreciate you allowing us to follow you guys along for a couple months and capture all the incredible work that Literacy Volunteers of the New River Valley does.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's been such a great experience. Not only, of course, we have that wonderful premiere this week with our community coming out to enjoy it with us, but also just the filming process. You know, it was great for our staff to just be there with our student and volunteer interviews and hear what they had to say. In an interview format, that's been really exciting and heartwarming for us to see that happen. And so the whole process has just been wonderful. And we've been getting some emails and phone calls. And one of our volunteers, he called the office to tell us how wonderful it was. He'd watched it on TV and he was choking up on the phone, just saying he was so proud to be a part of this organization. So we're really grateful for the whole opportunity and connecting with WordSprint, of course, and finishing out our rebranding project. So thank you so much for what you do in providing this program.
Well, of course, and for those who are tuning in and haven't seen the TV show yet, WordSprint is the marketing company based in Blacksburg that donated a lot of rebranding options for literacy volunteers at the New River Valley because the name is kind of a mouthful, and the name implies that you're serving volunteers rather than the students. And so a couple different options that were thrown out there by WordSprint with some lovely graphics to go along with it. And stay tuned to see what your organization does with that rebranding option. But anyway, it was a joyful opportunity to feature all the great work that Literacy Volunteers does. Going into the episode, just as an aside, I was thinking, how are we going to make reading visually captivating for a half-hour TV show? But man, the stories that you guys or that your students have are just, I mean, I don't think there was a dry eye in the place when we showed the episode in Blacksburg this week. It's emotional. And for those of you who want to find out more and see it, you can go to our YouTube channel at Buzz for Good and watch. It was lovely. Or it's also on our website, buzzforgood.com. Anyway, all that is prelude to say, you know, yours is an organization that invites volunteers to come and help people, both native born individuals as well as immigrants, learn basic literacy English skills. And I was struck while we were producing the episode that several of your volunteers are Virginia Tech students, college students. And I'm just, you know, wondering kind of how that came to be.
Yeah, we're really fortunate living where we do and in the community that we have. And I continue to be surprised at the number of college students that we get volunteering. It's just a wonderful surprise for us to see when they come through our training process. And so we do have students from Virginia Tech and then from VCOM, the Virginia College of Osteopathic Medicine, and Radford University as well, and also New River Community College. There are students who actually need volunteer hours for the ACE scholarship program at New River. And so we have put our name out there as an opportunity for them as well. And so it is in our one-to-one tutoring, which is our core program, we ask volunteers to sign up to commit for a year because they're being placed, you know, one-to-one with an adult in our community. And so that is not always an appropriate well, I shouldn't say not appropriate, but it's not something that college students are available for. Their life is so semester-based and working around the summer and their travel. But we do have classes, 7 to 10 week classes that happen in the spring and the fall. And so those have been a perfect opportunity for students to sign up with us and come to these classes and act as classroom assistants where an instructor leads the class, but the college students sit and work individually with the students through their lessons. And it's just been wonderful. They, at VCOM, our experience was we had a couple of students that had personal reasons for getting involved, and then they just sort of told their friends. And every training session we had, there'd be a few students, and we'd ask, oh, why are you here? And, well, my friend such and such told me what a great experience they're having. So it's just been wonderful to see. I think they have many opportunities as students to serve, and especially at Virginia Tech, their motto is Ut Prosum, that I may serve. And so it's really hardwired into their sense of community at Virginia Tech.
Well, you know, yes, it is hardwired into Virginia Tech, but it seems as though college students themselves are, I don't know, looking for ways to change the world. Or believe that maybe, and I don't know if it's youth or inexperience or they haven't been beaten down by the world too much yet, but, you know, there is this hopeful passion that they have that they can make a difference. Is that safe to say?
Yes, I think definitely. And I remember that time for me, you know, your worldview is sort of changing and you're, you know, having this time to get past sort of your family and their feelings and develop your own thoughts and experiences outside of that. And so it's an exciting time. And I do think, some of them are finding their way and trying to find what they're interested in and how they can make a difference. Virginia Tech has the big event, which is an annual one-day service opportunity, and they have thousands of students participate in that. But, you know, it's kind of an easier opportunity, and it's natural for them to sign up as a group. And so I'm just so impressed with the students that contact us directly. They have to make that initial outreach to us. They are interested in a more personal face-to-face experience, I think.
Yeah. You know, you mentioning how this is the first time in many young people's lives that they are kind of out from their family structures and, you know, discovering the world on their own. And I wonder how much, you know, that family structure, and I'm speaking to myself as much as anything here. My oldest daughter graduated JMU last year, and she's now a missionary in Belize. Uh-huh. And, you know, that old, you know, service mindset. And I find myself thinking, okay, yeah, go off, have your fun, get that out of your system, and then come back to begin kind of, you know, your real life, you know, which is, you know, and she, and I kind of said that in a, I hope, a more delicate way to her several months ago. And she's like, I feel like I am living my real life.
Oh,
so basically, you know, back off, Dad, and let me, you know, let me do this because I'm finding so much meaning in what I'm doing right now. And no, there's not really a great paycheck that goes along with it, but, you know, and so I wonder how much of that pressure, you know, comes from parents. It's like, okay, yeah, college is your time to go do all these things. But then once you graduate, boom, it's now time to do something with your life, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah, I think that's definitely at least how our American culture is right now. I mean, we even call it a gap year, right? Like in between high school and college, or 1 year after college. So you can just sort of take this gap, but then get back to real life. And right. It's heartwarming to see that shift a little bit. I think at least when I was attending college, it was you had to go to college to get a well-paying job. And also it needed to be in accounting or architecture or something, you know, along those lines. And our economy has changed and the way we work has changed. And that's not always a given now. And so it's impressive to see college-age students really think about that and not just go through kind of the machine that was put in place before them.
Yeah, the machine. I like that. I like that. Well, and hopeful. I'm hopeful that I'll kind of do better with my second daughter who is graduating college this weekend, and, you know, helping her navigate without trying to put that pressure on her of, you know, all right, now it's time to, you know, begin the real world.
Yeah.
Rewind in time, if you would. Once again, I'm joined here on Buzz for Good by Jenny Ayers, who is the executive director of Literacy Volunteers of the New River Valley. And we are talking about just the idealism that college graduates have, that and how to kind of maintain that belief that they can make a difference in the world through nonprofits in their careers and their years ahead. Rewind in time, Jenny, to you in college, and you know, where were you? What were you majoring in? And what did you think your career was going to be about?
Yeah, it's funny looking back on it, because you just kind of you think you're going to go in one direction, and it just doesn't happen. And so I started out in accounting at Virginia Tech and sort of had this, you know, business mindset, and that's what I needed to do, and was going to, you know, make a lot of money and work for a corporation or something like that. Mm-hmm. And after I was there a couple of years and kind of started to develop my own worldview, I guess I'll say, and of course you meet so many people at a large university like Virginia Tech, it really gets you out of your comfort zone sometimes, which I think is really important. And so I changed my major to psychology just because I did have that sort of sense of idealism and that I wanted to help people and help others through the community. My family had been through a lot of things through the years and were resilient and felt like I had something to share with others. Now, once I finished my bachelor's degree program, I did not have the funds to be able to continue going to school at that time. And so it was really hard to find a job. And I actually ended up finding a position in manufacturing accidentally and worked there in the quality certification program.
So you made a psychology degree, made it difficult for you to find a job?
It did. A job that would pay for me to live on my own and support myself.
Sure.
Because it was a social work type of job, which I would have loved to do, but I just couldn't at that time. This would have been the early 90s. I couldn't support myself on it without continuing on and getting postgraduate degrees. And so I fell into a job that I ended up loving and stayed there for 13 years. And then when it was time, they closed down, went out of business, and time to do something different. And I went back to Virginia Tech, and again, just sort of by accident, got a position in alumni relations, working with alumni volunteers across the country, Hokies, and absolutely loved it. And so I got my master's degree while I was there, and in instructional technology, so in the College of Education, and just then spent the next 14 years or so managing volunteers, volunteer training, volunteer support, fundraising, that kind of thing. It's funny how it turns out.
And here you are.
I sort of had that idealism at the beginning, and then I found that I wasn't able to really support myself, at least through that, in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also wonder, I mean, just with the cost of higher education these days and the loans that so many students have to take out just to pay for it, they need some lucrative position coming out of college just to kind of get back to square one.
Yes, that's right. So they do still have that same pressure on them. And so I'm always, especially the VCOM students, I mean, they're in medical school, for heaven's sake. They've got so much work that they're involved with in school and things that they do as part of that. And so to also seek out these opportunities to show up face-to-face with adults in a community that they didn't even grow up in, I think it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. How many college grads end up continuing to volunteer with literacy volunteers?
You know, that's a really good question, because it's hard to know. At least the college students, a lot of them aren't from our area and don't stay here. Sure. And so they're moving on somewhere else. So we recently had a student she helped support several of our programs, actually, but at one in particular that we had our kind of graduation ceremony at Virginia Tech, she was there and became very emotional, just hugging our students and thinking about the fact that she's graduating and wouldn't be able to continue volunteering in the same way with us as she had been. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we were able to remind her that there are community-based literacy organizations across the country. And so we actually were able to connect her with the Northern Virginia organization where she's headed. And she was happy to be able to continue that work. But it was wonderful to see how much it had affected her personally.
Well, I wonder if we should be grateful for the fact that, you know, we do have college students who are full of this idealism and passion to change the world, and that they are willing to serve. Should we be grateful for that? Or should we lament the fact that, you know, once they graduate, you know, some of that gets lost just through life and whatnot?
Yeah, I think both. We're definitely grateful for it. And also can lament it, because that's just sort of the way the world works. And even in my alumni relations days, working with our alumni chapter volunteers, it was kind of the same. I mean, people would be involved maybe in college and maybe those first couple of years out, but then you get whatever your kind of what we think of as your real job starts, and then you may get married and then you start a family. And so in the volunteer world, that's just kind of understood that we don't have a lot of volunteers from that like 25 to 45 zone. And so people, just because they just don't have time, and especially at literacy volunteers, where it's a little bit more of a commitment, we try to offer some easier ways to join as well. But and I know that was true for me. I became familiar with literacy volunteers at least 20 years ago, probably 25 years ago. Absolutely loved them, became a supporter as a donor. But then waited until my son finished high school to think, okay, now I'm ready to be this volunteer. And so I actually became a volunteer at Literacy Volunteers. Mm-hmm. And then when this position came open, was able to shift over to that. But it very much was, I can't do it for this sort of 25-year block.
Yeah. Well, once again, on Buzz for Good, joined by Jenny Ayers, Literacy Volunteers of the New River Valley, Executive Director. And we're talking about the role that college kids play with her organization and other nonprofits, and how to try to maintain that enthusiasm for volunteering and service, you know, once they graduate college. And, you know, you were talking about how there's that oftentimes like the 25-year block between graduating college and, you know, maybe when your own kids then are out of the house and you can start doing more volunteer work. But there are other opportunities, you know, like you mentioned, as a donor, ways that you can continue giving on a very modest scale to kind of capture that particular, I don't know, demographic.
It is. Yes. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is something that's changing in the world of fundraising, is that this current generation of younger people, the younger kind of millennials, and then this new sort of generation, are giving at a higher level than our generation did at that age. They have a better understanding. It's easier for them to give, I think, in some ways. They realize that is a way that you can be involved and participate when you may not physically be able to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're comfortable with the technology that is being used by nonprofits to, you know, here's $5, here's $10, here's something through my phone, through your, you know, app, whatever it might be, to support the nonprofit.
Yes, I think they've really embraced that sort of crowdfunding thought, that $5 really does make a difference. Whereas I think some people think, oh, I can't give because I don't have $1,000 sitting around.
Right.
Or,
you know, the even older generation that only gives by check.
Yes. Yeah, it's easy when you can give by Venmo and your friend just Venmoed you $15 for dinner last night. You know, you're like, hey, I can give that back to somebody else.
That's right. That's right. I love it. So there still is that opportunity. I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, it's not just volunteering, but I mean, philanthropy and all, because we often are critical of, quote, kids these days because they don't give back. But really, if you look at the numbers, they do. They are.
They do.
You know, and you talk about there's that 25-year window between college and, you know, when you have time again to kind of do some volunteer. But it also seems to be the case with nonprofit leadership as well, you know, that like you, like me, like so many others who I know who are nonprofit leaders, that they started their career having to focus more on the money and maybe less about the passion that they have for, you know, the work that they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, it's really challenging because it's hard, you know, donors and grantors, that those funds are intended, they really want it to go to the programs and ultimately to the clients. And so it ends up making it hard to justify an executive director, for example, whose job is to be, to really, is administrative and not usually program-based. And so it's challenging, and I'm in a very fortunate position where, you know, I was able to decide to take this position thanks to my spouse, who is also employed and has the benefits that we need. We don't have health insurance at Literacy Volunteers and several other kind of benefits. We have many other benefits as far as it being just an amazing place to work and that kind of thing. But yeah, it would be harder for a young person supporting a family or just starting out to do that.
Yeah. Well, so what advice would you have if you were the one who was giving the graduation address, you know, for Virginia Tech or Radford University, you know, in the weeks ahead? And, you know, we always talk about college, you know, students, you know, going out to change the world, whatever that might mean. What would be your words of wisdom to such a student?
I think I would say be excited and be creative and be flexible. There's no one right thing. In the example of our student that felt emotional about leaving, it doesn't mean it's the end of something. We're always there for you when you're ready to return to that opportunity. But I think also you don't have to pick that one thing. Try them all. I volunteer for other things outside of work and give to many organizations. And so just continue to be curious and excited about all the good work that is going on in the world. And I just think it's the more that you are connected to an organization or a purpose that you're passionate about, the more it lets you balance out everything else that is happening in the world that might be scary.
Yeah,
and terrible.
Right. Yeah.
And it gives you a feeling of control and something that you can do to act against it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not just, you know, what you're doing for the world, but it's also kind of what you're doing for yourself.
Yes, exactly.
And the interior change and perspective that you have when you, you know, engage with a cause outside yourself, I think is just as transformative, if not more so.
Yeah, I agree.
Hmm. Well, I don't know what we solved there, Jenny, but I appreciate your, other than we need to have a country where we don't have to worry about the salaries that we make, but the good that we do.
That's right. Yep. I agree.
And until we get there, well, we'll just keep having conversations like these and keep supporting the great work that nonprofit organizations do, such as Literacy Volunteers of the New River Valley. And one more time, Jenny Ayers, Executive Director, thanks so much for coming on to Buzz for Good. And go watch our episode that just dropped on our YouTube channel at Buzz for Good on Literacy Volunteers. It's an amazing organization. Jenny, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Michael. And thank you for all the work that you do to highlight this important work that's going on in our community.
Well, my pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Jenny Ayers, Executive Director of Literacy Volunteers of the New River Valley, which we featured on our most recent Buzz TV show. It's now available through our website, buzzforgood.com. That's Buzz, B-U-Z-Z, number 4, good.com. As well as you can access us through our social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube, all at Buzz for Good. And here is just a clip from that episode to hopefully inspire you to watch and learn more about this fantastic organization.
You asked me what literacy is. Literacy is so many things. It's opportunity, it's independence, It's a bridge and a ladder, and it's power. And I feel like we're like the electric company, that by sharing the light of literacy, we're giving people power. And that's a really amazing thing, thanks to our volunteers and the community support.
From the nonprofit world to the entrepreneurial world, I next visited with Mike Abbott, the entrepreneur in residence for the Regional Accelerator and Mentoring Program, aka RAMP, which provides resources for startups and entrepreneurs throughout Southwest Virginia. Now, I maintain that nonprofit believers and for-profit entrepreneurs share many of the same motivations and passions and creativity, especially in college students who often seek to, quote, change the world. So I started my conversation with Mike asking if those sectors are mutually exclusive.
Good. So there's, I see a fundamental difference, and I think it's important to the conversation that you're trying to have, between entrepreneurialism, innovation, and invention.
Okay.
Right. So entrepreneurialism, I think is probably it's the least mission driven of the three. So let me define what I mean by those three. Okay. So if we start with invention, is coming up with something new, right? Mm-hmm. Finding something that's never been known before, whether that's a product, a service, an approach, a process, fundamental science, all of that's invention. And I often tell people that invention is the process by which you take money and turn it into something new, right? Because you don't really make money inventing. So you take a university, it's designed to invent things. Compare that to innovation. And innovation doesn't require invention, because innovation is taking things that are new and applying them in a way that you can then create money. So instead of taking money and making something new, you're taking something new and turning it back into money.
Okay.
That something new doesn't have to be, you know, hard science based. You can see examples of innovation through simply looking at new parts of an existing business model. Dollar Shave Club is a great example. They sold for $1 billion and they didn't invent anything. They simply changed a channel by which you receive razors, right? Innovation is typically driven. If you look at people that are working on innovation, it's typically driven by people identifying what they believe are fundamental flaws in the existing system. Right. I don't like how things are going. I think current solutions are underserving the people that they should be serving. So we want to fundamentally change the system. Now, I can either do that through invention, or I can do that by finding existing other solutions that I can either, you know, modify or apply, or, you know, simply, you know, co-opt from different areas and bring it to where I think the holes are, the gaps are, and change the system. So that's innovation, right? And ideally innovation only occurs if the outcomes are viewed as beneficial to those that they are intended to help.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Entrepreneurialism. If you go back to the root of that word, effectively what you're talking about is someone who is taking the initiative to control resources that are fundamentally not within their control in order to manage a business, right? Mm-hmm. So we often, you know, popular culture at this point sort of equates innovation and entrepreneurialism as sort of the same thing. The person who opens a new brick and mortar, you know, say pizza shop down the road, is just as much of an entrepreneur as someone who's trying to start a high-tech business.
Yes.
In that they are trying to manage resources that they don't necessarily have access to. Mm-hmm. And they're taking the personal risk, the financial risk, the business risk to go out there and find the resources, manage them, and create the organization. So entrepreneurialism really, I think, is driven by the desire to manage those innovations into a working business model. Think about it that way.
Okay. Right.
So entrepreneurs, if you look at, you know, this term serial entrepreneur, you hear that a lot because people will start and run multiple businesses and make them successful. They may not be the innovator.
Yeah.
Right. They most often are not. So when you look at innovation, invention, and entrepreneurialism, very rarely do you find a single person that can do all three. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you find people who can do two of the three, but very rarely can they do all three. So when you ask about, you know, college students, or I guess the question was, is entrepreneurialism and
that desire for service that may be more aligned with the nonprofit sector, are they
right? So nonprofit, mm-hmm. are they fundamentally the same thing? And the answer is absolutely. They're not mutually exclusive.
Okay.
In fact, someone who runs a nonprofit will probably tell you it's far more difficult to be an entrepreneur and run a nonprofit because it's more difficult to garner the resources necessary to keep the doors open.
Yeah.
Right. So in a way, they have to be even more entrepreneurial than someone who has a product that they know has monetary value on the market.
Mm-hmm. So,
right.
Yeah. So kind of going back to my, you know, I guess thesis, if you will, that the energies, the passions, the inspiration, the desire, you know, for both of the, for this space that we're talking about, I would say sometimes is at a peak when you are in college.
I would agree.
Okay. Sure. I'm glad.
I do agree with that. We may disagree on why that's true, but I absolutely agree that that's true.
Yeah. All right. Well, tell me why you think that's true.
Well, so I don't want to sound like a cynic, mm-hmm. right? Because I think that the, you know, the unbridled enthusiasm that we see at the college level is something that unfortunately we lose as we get older.
Yeah.
But I think the reason we lose that enthusiasm is the same reason why it's at a peak in college, which is you simply don't have exposure to a fundamental reality of the world that until you come to terms with. It's really difficult to manage your own expectations as an entrepreneur or as a, you know, a social entrepreneur, wherever you happen to be working.
Yeah.
And I see this in established people that are working in established companies as part of their careers, in particular, like you mentioned, the nonprofit world, as well as, for example, the medical space. And the reality they have that they don't necessarily want to admit is there is that first and foremost, there's no such thing as a perfect solution to anything, mm-hmm. right? We're always going to be making a sacrifice in order to realize the benefit of any particular solution. Once we accept that as being true, and I think there's ample evidence to demonstrate that that's true, simply from the fact that there are multiple options, multiple solutions for just about every problem on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So once you come to the realization that there's no such thing as a perfect solution, you start to realize what your, you know, most people build this enthusiasm around, we're going to fix all of the problems in a particular space, right? That's what that unbridled enthusiasm is. We're going to change the world. We're going to do it better than it's ever been done before.
Yep.
And we won't have the problems that we see now. And what you realize, the more and more you try to do that, is that every time you push, you know, every time you push the waterbed down on one side, it pops up on the other, right? It's the classic engineering control problem, where if we put more control authority onto the pieces of the puzzle that we think are being done poorly, we by definition will be sacrificing something somewhere else in the system.
Yeah. Okay.
And we don't spend as much time asking the question, if we fix this perceived problem, what are the potential negative outcomes of us, quote, fixing it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you go through that, and most people go through that exercise through experience. right? We impose new solutions and we find out, well, we've created other problems we didn't anticipate.
And that experience isn't learned or offered up in college.
Well, you just haven't had the time to get it.
Yeah.
Right. So from an experiential perspective, you know, you've realistically, you're never, very few people have that ability to have that experience before they go to college.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a 4-year period of your life in which you have to experience the fact that when you impose new solutions, you're also asking for new sacrifices. Right. You're presenting, instead of presenting a solution to all the problems, you're presenting a new trade space. What you're really asking is, if I provide you with these benefits you don't have today, are you willing to sacrifice some things that you're not sacrificing today?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Everything has pros and cons.
Yep.
So in 4 years of your life, it's very difficult to do that enough times to realize that that's a pattern and that's reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, pedagogically, you could ask the question of, do we do a good job of teaching that reality to people that are going through college? And I think the answer is we don't. We don't really do a good job of teaching that reality even in the real, you know, the real world. Right. But the corporate world, a lot of what I do professionally is trying to get people to understand that that's the reality of introducing new products and services. So I don't think it's a failure of the system. I think it's, you know, eventually everybody's got to touch the stove.
Yes. Well, let me take a quick moment to introduce you or reintroduce you here to the show. I'm joined here on Buzz for Good by Mike Abbott, who I will use. You have many hats, many terms, but I will use the one entrepreneur in residence for RAMP, the Regional Accelerator and Mentoring Program here in Southwest Virginia. Why don't you, though, Mike, if you would, give us your 30-second elevator pitch on who is Mike Abbott?
It's a tough
seconds,
question.
Now. 30 seconds.
I know 30 seconds is a tough part of me. By training, I'm a mechanical engineer. I'm a Hokie at heart. So I've got an undergraduate and a master's degree in mechanical engineering from Virginia Tech. And I've spent the better part of 30 years in product development. So engineering product development. I've worked in almost every industry you can imagine because I've worked largely as a gun for hire in the product development world. In the last decade, I've spent a good amount of my time, if not the majority of my time, trying to understand why products fail. Why do seemingly good products from an engineering and technical perspective fail in the commercial market? Because I saw plenty of that, continue to see it in the product development world. And at this point, I spent most of my time now working with everything from startups, which I enjoy, but I spend most of my time with large established companies, Fortune 500, Fortune 100, helping them understand how to implement innovation as a business process,
mm-hmm.
which is something a lot of people don't understand is even possible, right? It's typically a, you know, go buy yourself a nice black turtleneck sweater and some funny looking glasses and you're an innovator. Because we just don't know how to wrap a process around innovation. So I've developed tools and methodologies and approaches that help companies create innovation as a process within their company in order to do a better job of reading the crystal ball of what they should be doing with their product portfolio over the next 5 to 10 years.
Gotcha.
So that's, and I'm an investor and I've started multiple businesses and sit on advisory boards and I get involved wherever I can.
So that slightly exceeded our 30 seconds, but I'll give you some.
I know it did. I know it did.
Hey, well, rewind if you could way back to when you were in college at Virginia Tech, and what was your journey in terms of entrepreneurism and volunteerism, and what was your mindset coming out of that as you were graduating and preparing to start quote the real world.
That's a fantastic question, because I think when you reflect on your own experience, it gives you a much better understanding of how to how to answer these questions through the correct lens, right? Because you only have 4 years of that lens versus 30 of the experience, right? So from a, you mentioned, you know, from a service perspective, I've always been around service from a community perspective. I was very heavily involved in the Boy Scouts as a kid, an Eagle Scout. So I understood very early on what it meant to provide service back to the community and spend that kind of time. My parents were very influential in making that happen, as well as my older brother, who I viewed as a very much as a, almost an idol until I until I beat him in the SAT, and then I decided he wasn't as much of an idol. He was now a competitor. But he's sort of what got me into the process of giving back to the community, because I saw him doing it at an early age. So and I've carried that throughout my life. In fact, I know you know, Michael, I'm still very involved in the Boy Scouts. I think it's a very fantastic way to get youth involved in understanding the value of community service. And giving back and solving problems that aren't necessarily, you know, monetarily valuable, but certainly valuable to our communities. So that's the service part. Now, obviously, in college, as an undergraduate engineer, not a lot of time to engage in that. And unfortunately, back in the back, way back in the Stone Age there, we didn't have programs that, for example, Virginia Tech runs now, like the big event. They weren't pushing that community engagement as much as they are now, unfortunately. So I think they've evolved and become very better at that, to give those opportunities to college students. And I encourage all, any college student, to find some way to be giving back to your community while you're in school. But the reality is, it's not a lot of time, especially in my case. I was also running track. I was a collegiate pole vaulter. I was also in the Marching Virginians, so I just didn't have time, right? And as a result, this, in addition to community service, there wasn't a lot of entrepreneurial discussion, right? That really wasn't part of the narrative when we were going through school back in the 90s. The idea was, you're going to get an engineering degree, you're going to go work for a big company as an engineer, and you were going to climb the ladder to corporate management. And that was just sort of the path. Right. So my first job was actually with the U.S. Navy. So, you know, as a civil servant, so pick the largest company you could possibly work for. And I realized quickly, and I didn't necessarily know how to interpret it, but I learned very quickly that that size of organization didn't fit my mentality very well. I didn't like the bureaucracy that comes with a very large organization. So I went, that's part of what motivated me to go back to graduate school.
But I can't imagine, any college student, or too many college students, you know, graduating thinking, oh, I want to go work for a really big bureaucratic corporation or organization where I could be just a cog in a much bigger machine. You know, I would think,
well, you know, I think in retrospect, that's an easy thing to say. But when you're coming out of college, you know, what lured me?
That's true.
What lured me into working as a civil servant with the Navy is, look at their toys, man. Right. You have somebody say, you just got an engineering degree and you get to go work on the V-22 program, or help develop the F-18 Super Hornet. That's remarkably attractive. Now, what you don't know, what I didn't know, is what does that really mean, right? What is your actual involvement? I think I probably would have been more satisfied had I been on the contractor side, right? Working for a Lockheed Martin or a Boeing, or I would have enjoyed that more. I didn't understand.
You're not actually in the Super Hornet flying it.
Right. Well, yes, certainly not. Right. And you're not even on the design team. Right. You're on the signature authority for the government team, which is very different. And of course, I just didn't know. I was ignorant. Right. I just didn't understand what I was getting myself into. So when I went back to grad school, which was a very different experience than undergraduate for me, from an engineering perspective, that's a whole nother podcast, is you know, why would you go to grad school versus undergraduate as a technical degree? But when I came out of there, instead of going to these massive organizations, I took what I thought was a major risk, And I went to a very small company in Baltimore where I think I was, if I recall correctly, I was the sixth or seventh person through the door.
Okay.
Very small organization, engineering services. And I was even, telling my fiance at the time, now my wife, I don't know how long this is going to last, right? I don't know if I'm going to survive this. It seems extremely risky. It's because it looked nothing like any of my adult mentors or role models had ever done. Mm-hmm. It was the closest thing to entrepreneurialism I had seen to that point. It turned out to be the best decision I ever made. And I realized small business is where I wanted to be. All right. Being able to help direct where the business was going, direct how you grow the business. You know, we grew from seven to, by the time I left, was close to 30 employees doing very different things. We changed the fundamental direction of the company. Fantastic experience. And that's what sort of turned me on to that's where I want to be, right? I want to be in small business. I want to be around people that are doing new things, trying new things, starting businesses, et cetera. Came back to Blacksburg to what in effect was a startup company, right? All the technology was in the lab, and stuck with that until we exited, took it through manufacturing, exited, sold the company. And then from that point on, since I was in Blacksburg, yet another podcast, right? What happens when you exit your company in the New River Valley? Where do you go? Right.
Yeah.
Whole nother subject we could talk about. And I decided I'm either going to have to move or I'm going to have to do something on my own, become and start my own companies. And I chose the latter, and I've gotten lucky. I've gotten very lucky to be surrounded by a lot of very smart, very capable people that helped me along the way. And, you know, the rest is history. And here I am.
And here you are once again here on Buzz for Good, Mike Abbott, who is entrepreneur in residence with RAMP, the Regional Accelerator Mentoring Program, an entrepreneur in his own right, an investor in various startup companies, international instructor.
I like to use the term coach. We certainly do instruct, but most of my time is spent coaching teams on how to evaluate innovation opportunity.
So Mike, as we're nearing the end of our time together, if you were delivering a commencement address to a college, a university, your alma mater, perhaps even Virginia Tech, what advice would you be giving that graduating class?
That is a fantastic question. I think first and foremost, I would have to obviously approach it from this innovation entrepreneurial perspective, because that's where my passion is. I think the approach, I think the message I would want to provide would be that regardless of what they believe, everyone sitting in the audience right now is already an entrepreneur and a business owner. And that business is yourself, right? You are your own product.
I like it.
And you need to be thinking of yourself as a product. Mm-hmm. So what that means is it's multiple consequences, right? One is you always have to be improving products, right? You can't put something on the market and then expect it to be successful for forever. You have to look at continuous improvement. So continue to learn, right? College was a place to learn how to learn. Most of the people in the audience will be in a job that's not related to their major within 5 years. Mm-hmm. So that means you have to know how to adapt. And what are you adapting to is also important to understand that if you're doing something and you're not enjoying it, right? There are a lot of people that don't like this statement, but I tell entrepreneurs, passion is a commodity. If you're not passionate about what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it, right? I like to live in a world where hopefully everyone is passionate about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So if you're not passionate about what you're doing, if it's not fulfilling you intellectually, emotionally, stop and go do something else, right? Run yourself as a business.
What about the financial side of that, though?
That's, a lot of people will get stuck in positions and jobs and pathways because of the financial side.
Right.
And a lot of corporate structure is designed, frankly, to emotionally trap you, right? Stock options is a good example. Why would I ever leave before my stock option vests? And if money is the most important thing to you in the world, then by all means, stay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
if that's what you're passionate about,
that's right. That's right. If your passion is making money, then do whatever you can to keep that financial stream going. I've made multiple decisions in my own life where I took as much as an 85% pay cut to change a direction. And it works out because I have found for myself, one man's experience, right? And watching other people that I've been involved with, if you're doing what you're passionate about, the financial reward will either show up on its own organically, or you realize that the financial reward is not as important as the emotional reward.
Hmm.
If financial reward was the number one driver for everybody, you know, going back to the original question, you wouldn't have nonprofits.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, the advice is don't let the financials drive the decision as much as the your emotional well-being, right? Your passion for what you want to do. Let that drive it and then figure out how you make money doing it. That's the entrepreneurial side. That's the innovation side,
mm-hmm.
right? But that would be my advice, right? Treat yourself as a business. You are your own product and understand that adaptation is part of the game. Don't let yourself trap yourself where you shouldn't be. Create a new product if you need to. But the other very important part, and if you look at failure mechanisms in the nonprofit world, which is a really good place to mine data on this subject, what you find is that a lot of failures occur because we spend too much time being enthralled with our own perception of what the solution should be.
Hmm.
And we don't spend enough time to understand and be passionate about the people that we're trying to help.
Yeah.
And the first thing you do if you're passionate about the people you're trying to help is you listen to them. Right? Mm-hmm. And you're not only listening to the need, but you're also listening to the context in which they're trying to meet that need. And if you don't understand the context and you don't understand the circumstances around which they have to operate, then you will most likely create a solution that works great for you from your spotlight, but is probably inadequate when you place it in theirs. So you can't let your need to modify your perceived solution get in the way of the enthusiasm and the passion around helping the person. Helping the person sometimes means providing them a solution that is not, quote, ideal from your perspective,
mm-hmm.
right? The adoption of things that help people is the first step to helping them, right? If you create something that fundamentally can't be adopted, you can't meet your mission. So that's the point. Be passionate about the people, not passionate about your solution.
Nice.
Build a solution that your people can be passionate about.
Yes. Yes. All right. Mike Abbott, entrepreneur in residence for Ramp, as well as a coach for national and international companies. Thanks so much for coming on to Buzz for Good and sharing your insights into how to keep that entrepreneurial flame alive for today's college graduate and tomorrow's business leaders, world leaders, game changers, all of the above.
You're welcome. It's always a joy to talk with you, Michael.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Many thanks again to Mike Abbott and Jenny Ayers for coming on today's Buzz for Good and sharing their perspectives. Please continue to stay connected with us throughout the week through our website, buzzforgood.com, as well as our social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. I want to congratulate all of you college graduates one more time as you prepare to walk the stage and receive your diplomas in the days and weeks ahead. Continue being a force for good in your community, wherever you land. And thank you again for listening. We'll see you next week.